Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.
Welcome to the Gastroenteritis Blues. When it's late at night, I record like it's NPR. Hi, my name is Steve Lippman. I am with my good friends, Emily Cannell and Dan Volpone. Emily, first question is for you. As the doctor on the podcast,
oh my God,
I have a medical question.
That is correct.
So allergies have been killing me lately.
I can hear it in your voice.
Okay, a little rude. Allergies have been killing me lately, and I am absolutely injecting nasal spray. Is there a risk to my current or future health for ingesting this much nasal spray? You can just run with that.
As someone who is not a doctor and has no medical expertise in this
sort of
area, I say that I think it's fine.
You think it's fine?
Yeah.
Okay. Dan, do you have a non-medical opinion?
Yeah, I think you should just do whatever makes you happy.
I really appreciate that. Speaking of, I don't know if I would say happy, but the Sixers just won on a Ben Simmons buzzer beater in overtime. They played the Spurs, and the Spurs were short, I think, four starters. The Sixers went 4-0 this week. They beat Oklahoma City, Atlanta twice, and the Spurs. Most of those teams, if not every single one of those games, the other team was not interested in winning. It seems like this is what's happening around the league right now, is that teams are just not really giving a shit about winning, except for the top teams in the conferences who are jockeying for playing whatever. This game was a slog. We can just talk first about this game. This game was not good. Joel had, I think, 35 at the end of the game, but nobody – it looked like the Sixers were really sleepwalking through this one, whereas – in the other three games, they turned it on for like 8 minutes straight and just killed those teams and then didn't have to play heavy minutes. But in this one, Sixers had to play a bunch of minutes, and they have another road back-to-back tomorrow in Chicago, which I hope they just rest everybody for. I like, just don't screw around. This is a very packed stretch. Dan, let me get your immediate reaction to this game, the buzzer beater, and the Sixers beating the vaunted San Antonio Spurs and Keldon Johnson. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a good game. I don't think anyone would say that the Sixers had a good game, but they won, and it was an important win. And they're, you know, it's near the end of the regular season. You know, they've been dealing with playing teams who weren't particularly interested the last few nights. They have guys who have played a lot of games this year who are coming back from injury still relatively. So, you take a win here. I mean, yeah, it sucked. I'm so glad we didn't get a double overtime. So thank goodness Ben tipped that in. It was a really nice tip to end the game. And these games happen. I feel like we've almost come to take this year for granted. And I'm not sure how much I buy into the whole, like, you know, like this year is going to be completely different all the time, right? Like the Sixers are better. But you know, I think a lot of it is also that you know, just they've had so few games like this, and that's the difference. They've had so few games where it's like even a win feels bad. You know, a win feels like they didn't play well. And I don't want to be unappreciative of the fact that like there have been very few games like this. Like almost every game, it's felt like the Sixers have really brought it, which is rare, not just for like the Sixers coming off of last year, but just like any team to have so few nights where it's rough. and to be able to pull out a win in one of those few nights, and a win to take the lead in the conference when it's absolutely essential that they have the one seed in this conference, because their path at the two seed would be awful. I think that it's a good win, and I refuse to complain about it, as hard as it was to watch at times, because it was a really important win.
I think that is a good perspective, and you're right. You know, they won the game, which is, they just had to do. The subtext, of course, is that Brooklyn lost today for the first time this season, actually, and the Sixers took a half game lead with this win for first place. So that was very good. I want to send a quick mazel tov to Rhys Hoskins, who just hit a home run. That must be so fun. Emily,
his 100th home run, I think.
Yeah, I think that was number 100 this year.
Yeah.
Emily, how do you feel after that Sixers win?
My perspective on my whole evening has really like shifted in the past 15 seconds, because at a point I was miserable. I was like, sports are misery. I hate everything. Like the Sixers and the Phillies, because I was flipping, had them both on. They were melting down at the exact same moment. The Sixers were down by two and the bases were loaded and we were walking people in the Phillies. And I was like, this is torture, like literal torture. But now everything might come out roses. So sports are great. I love Philadelphia. But overall, like Dan said, like these bad wins are going to happen. They just kind of like took their foot off the slightly depressed gas at the end. Like they were just holding like a coasting on a 10-point lead, and then they let these like young guys get some confidence and they just let up a little bit. It was fine. Joel played great. Tobias and Ben looked horrible. Mm-hmm. Seth Curry couldn't miss, which was very fun. He was just like lights out from three, which was cool, and I hope he stays hot.
Yeah.
And I loved when Joel was so happy that Ben tipped that ball in. And I think it was mostly so he didn't have to play any more basketball tonight. Mm-hmm. But I like to think it was also he was happy for his friend.
Yeah, we should. Speaking of Ben, I was running the Liberty Ballers account tonight, and I tweeted from it with like 2 minutes left in overtime that if not for optics, I would bet that Doc might want to go with George Hill instead of Simmons at this point, because in crunch, Simmons didn't do anything on offense all game. His defense was very good, especially at the end of the game. But he was pretty terrible offensively, didn't really do much of anything. And I think he was maybe 2 of 7, 2 of 6 from free throw, something like that. Then
there's two of six from the field, 1 of 5 from the line.
Great. Then a couple minutes later, Simmons takes, I believe, 2 charges and a lot of responses to my original tweet, like SMH, imagine thinking this. And maybe they wouldn't have needed those charges if he had decided to play offense during the game. One small point. Does he have a black eye? What do we think about the black eye? Because it sure looks like a ring under his eye. I don't know.
It's 100% a black eye.
Right. So that could very easily have happened in practice. You just have think that would come up on the injury report. But anyway, you know.
Back to misery on the Phillies, by the way. It was a ground rule double, not a home run. Now it's 8-7 and we're not tied.
Oh, that's the worst.
Wow. Yeah, we're back to misery. Since I said how happy I was, I feel like I needed to update everyone. Tomorrow morning, everyone will know what happened. But.
And I take back my congratulations. My ground rule double, not as cool. The other thing about Simmons.
Yeah, it was not number 100, however.
No. We saw it with the buzzer beater, is that he does make plays when you need somebody to make a play. You know, he gets the loose balls. He's incredibly smart and he's a great defender. It is also hard to keep him off the court that way. But this is like the everlasting conundrum with Ben, is that, you know, in the half court offense, sometimes he can really gum things up for you. But in a play like this where Embiid just rimmed out a shot and Simmons was there at the perfect time, you're very happy you had him. So it was pretty emblematic of like Simmons' career so far, I think. Emily, where do you come down on that at the end of a game with Simmons? I mean, obviously he's going to play, so it's sort of moot. But like, did you find yourself wishing that they just put a regular guard in there at times.
Yeah, I kind of had, like, I don't think it would have hurt them to pull, like, the Matisse move. They had called the timeout to take Matisse out of the game and, like, take Ben. Like, Ben was great on defense. Just take Ben out of the game for there. Like, he's not going to take a jumper at any point to, like, if the shot clock is running down. Like, I mean, it worked out for them, but, I mean, there could be better options. Like, so were all the starters out at the end? Is that what it was?
It was all the starters, yeah.
Like, I would have
just all the starters.
I could have taken, like, some Furkan for Ben, like, someone who can hit a jumper of some sort ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that that I think is probably a big deal within, like, agencies and closed doors. Yeah, so sure. I think that would be a big issue, which is why it has never happened, you know, and why it doesn't happen. Dan, where do you land on that? Because you did see both ends of it. You know, you saw Simmons making things really hard on offense, and you saw him make some, you know, extremely important plays, including the one that won the game. So what do you think?
Yeah, I wouldn't take Ben out. I think that, it's easy to say, like, what about, you know, if it wasn't for the optics and the agencies and stuff, but, you know, it is a reality that those things are important. And I think even if they're not important, I would have him in, because you want to have your best players in at the end of the mm-hmm. game, to say, you know, Ben is the guy who you would think would step up more so than, you would have more confidence in him, you know, even in a bad night, making a big play than George Hill. Right. I don't think, I'm not saying that, you know, it's like ridiculous, that, you know, I think it's a thought that everyone's had. You know, I'm not trying to come at you about anything that you tweeted on the account, because, you know, offensively, it can, you know, there were even games, you know, last year with, like, when Neto or Burke would have a good game, and it's like, those guys stink. But it's mm-hmm. like, if you have a guy who can just, like, have this kind of solid night, but consistently, you know, a solid Trey Burke night, but a guy who does that all the time, which there's so many players who do that. The offense looks really good. Mm-hmm. And Ben can be frustrating in that regard. I would have still had him in, especially, I think, you know, for good reasons that, you know, we can easily disregard. Doc had to have him in. Yeah. I think the one thing that's just a little frustrating is, like, the degree to which not we on this podcast, but as a Sixers, I guess, community, have basically discounted the importance of his counting stats. You know, he had 5, 6, and 5 tonight, and he was at, and that's in overtime in 35 minutes. He was at 3, 5, and 5 before that tip in. And that's not, you know, one bad counting stat night. You know, he's averaging 14.7 points coming into this game. So all of these numbers are going to be lower, but I'll read some off. He had 15.8 his rookie year, 16.9 his second year, 16.4 last year. He's down to 14.7 this year, way below his previous career low. Assists is what we all talk about with Ben. He had 8.2 his rookie year, 7.7 his second year, 8 last year. He's at 7 this year, a flat 7. So again, way below his career high. Way below his previous career low. He's below his previous career low in rebounds. In steals, he's above his career low, but below his career average, and he's half a steal less than last year per game. And he's right on his career average for blocks. And, you know, there's a point to be made if, you know, the Sixers are basically, you know, a million times better with him on the floor. And they're obviously better in games when he plays. I'm not saying that. But there are lineups without him that look good that if you add him to that, he might, you know, cram him up a little bit. I think this idea that he makes everybody universally better is not backed up in the box score stats, like, you know, the on-off stats. It's not backed up in the box score. It's not backed up in the advanced stats. And he's a great defender. He's a really talented player. Even offensively, when he's frustrating, I would 100% have him on the court. But I don't like that we've lowered our expectations so far. I think that there's something indicative of his numbers being this low. And Tobias has fallen off a little bit. And I want to see Ben step up now and say, I can take a little bit more responsibility in offense, because I know he's capable. I know he can do it. That's why I have him on the floor. He made a great play to end the game. I don't want it to act like this is all negative because he really stepped up, like you said. You know, this isn't like a Ben Simmons hate thing I'm trying to go on, but I just think that he needs to, and I don't know what the coaches are doing behind closed doors, and I don't expect him to say anything in the media, but for the fans, it can't just be like, there's, you know, everything is fine. It doesn't matter what he does. Nothing he does matters. Because it matters. It can't be that. It can't be a big shrug every time Ben Simmons does anything.
So there are, I think, 2 weeks left in the season, and you know, obviously, he's gonna do whatever he's gonna do, and the Sixers, I think, have a really good chance to be first in the East. We'll talk about, you know, where they stand and what they have ahead of them, but it's all gonna come to a head in the playoffs. The whole Simmons thing. It's gonna be like he either makes enough of those winning plays that, because the team can't win and get to the heights that they want to get to without Ben being good Ben. So it's like they'll need everybody. You know, we're not talking about Tobias. Tobias was really bad tonight, and he doesn't have near Simmons' impact on the game otherwise. But you know, we'll see. Both of those guys have been largely pretty good this year, especially Tobias. And this was a game that I think they really sleepwalked through, and they ended up winning it. And I'm glad, but again, they made it much harder than it should have been, especially with the stretch they have coming up, just in terms of condensed games. The black eye, Emily, what's going on? Where did he get the black eye?
I don't know. Maybe like he was playing with his dog because he has really big dogs, and like maybe it jumped on his face.
Many dogs. Yeah.
Because like I don't ever remember like a play in the Hawks games where like he got elbowed in the face or anything.
I don't remember. Dan, do you have any theories?
I like the dog theory. I think that's really cute.
The dog theory is a good one. And he has so many that one of them is bound to give you a black eye.
Yeah, and they're not little dogs. They're big dogs.
If not the dogs, I'm thinking Vincent Poirier, because he was not happy. And I think maybe he came in to crack some heads, and he couldn't find Doc, who he hates now. And then he went to Ben. Sixers are now a half game up of the Nets, and they have, what is it? Does anybody know? Is it 8 games left on the year that we've 4 this week and maybe 4 next week, something like that? There's no way to know.
Give me 1 second.
Go ahead. Dan's checking.
They've played 64 games, so they have 8 games left.
Okay. So I want to know what you guys think happens from here. The hard part now is that the Sixers have 5 games in 7 nights. They're not against particularly difficult teams, and they really, except for Emily's wedding, they've beat up on bad teams. The one day that they lost to a bad team was on Emily's wedding. Mm-hmm. What do you guys think happens? Do you think that, you know, the complicating thing is how condensed the games are? Brooklyn doesn't seem like they're dead set on, like, you know, trying everything. Do you think that they will, you know, successfully get the one seed? Would you rather rest people? You know, it's a very difficult balance. Like, what would you rather do in order to get to the playoffs? Obviously, you want the one seed, but it doesn't matter if they're not healthy. Dan, what do you want to happen in terms of, like, games played and rest and that kind of thing? And what do you think will happen in the end from where we sit today?
Yeah, I mean, I just think they're going to play their guys, and I think they should. I don't think it's the time to you know, give guys a ton of rest. I think, you know, you go for that first seed and you worry a lot less about the first round when you're playing, you know, someone from you know, basically not Miami. You're playing the worst team to make it out of the play-in tournament. And I think that hopefully they can clinch. It's not like a last game of the season thing. I mean, they're going to be favorites in every game they have left. They're not really playing anyone good. I'm not saying they'll win them all, although I hope obviously that they do. But Brooklyn has a tough schedule.
Brooklyn plays Milwaukee again.
They play Milwaukee Tuesday, their next game. They still have Dallas, Denver, Chicago, San Antonio, Chicago, Cleveland. So some easy games to end the year. But with Milwaukee and Denver, and Denver's been looking good. So they definitely have some tough games left, much more than the Sixers do. And they're a game behind the loss column, and they don't have the tiebreaker. The Sixers have the tiebreaker. So I would be, at this point, I don't want to jinx anything, so I'm knock on wood, but I'd be shocked if the Sixers did get the one seed. I would have been surprised anyway, because I think that even before today, where the Nets lost and the Sixers won, the Nets were, you know, a game up on the, or half a game up on the Sixers, but it was in the win column. And I'm looking at the Sixers, the rest of the schedule, and I'm like, well, I'm not going to pick them to lose any of those. Like, they look like they could win all of these. And so I still, you know, they were technically behind, but I'm looking at it like the Sixers have the tiebreaker and they're only behind the loss column when they're playing easy teams and playing these bad teams really well. So I was like, I think the Sixers are ahead, and now they really are ahead. So I feel good about it. I think they need to play their guys until they clinch that one seed. And I do think that's what they'll do.
Emily, what do you think?
I agree. I don't think they're going to win out. I think they lose one of these next eight games. But I think it's still enough to get the one seed. And I think that that's important. I think our road in the playoffs is a lot easier with the one seed than the two seed. And I want the easier road. So I think that's the move. And I think that's what they're going to do.
Yeah, I basically agree. The only thing that I'm thinking is tomorrow's game or Monday night's game. Because they have to travel to Chicago and then play immediately that night. It looks like Zach LaVine won't play and Vucevic might play. I would like the Sixers' chances, even if they rest some guys. And the only real question is Joel, and do they just give him game off? So I might like to see that one for Joel and then have it be whatever, four games and six nights after that. But it's tough. One person we haven't talked about lately is Tyrese Maxey, who has played a lot better lately after sort of falling out of the rotation. It looks like he has improved a ton in the season, which is really rare, especially for whatever he is, like a 20-year-old. Doc Rivers was asked last week about Maxey, and he says that he doesn't know if Maxey will be in the regular playoff rotation, but he says, I have no doubt that he'll play in the playoffs. So it sounds like Maxey is going to get some minutes. You know, you would think if things are really slow out there, they might throw him in to just try to get to the rim a little bit. And then in terms of the rotation in itself, with George Hill here, Mike Scott no longer with us. He is on the bench, not dead. He's on the bench and not playing. Doc Rivers says that the plan when everybody is healthy is to go with Shake, George Hill, Matisse, Korkmaz, and Dwight as the bench unit, like you did today. What's your reaction to all that stuff, including Maxey and the lack of Mike Scott, Emily?
Well, if he is planning on playing Maxey in the playoffs, it sounds like Doc is planning to blow teams out in the playoffs, which there sounds good to me. But
I hope he's not planning to get blown out. I hope that it's yours.
Yeah, although it's mine. But yeah, I really enjoyed Maxey in those Chicago games. Atlanta games. I just thought he was really fun in both of those games, and I thought that he played really well, and it was a good like gauge of his potential, I think, and what he could bring to this team if he just, you know, gets a little older and more seasoned and more consistent. So it's fun, but yeah, I like the bench five that you said, and then when we blow people out, we can put in Maxey and B-Ball Paul and Rajon Tucker and Mason Jones, and I think that's everyone.
Yeah, you know, this week had a lot of blowouts for the Sixers, and it was just so fun to see our guys getting in there. And, you know, in the second Atlanta game, B-Ball Paul had a great dunk in transition, and Joel was rolling around on the ground, which
fantastic.
Is a really hilarious way to react to something. Dan, what do you got on the rotations and Tyrese and all that?
Yeah, I like what they went with tonight in terms of rotation. I like how Max has been playing. I think it's been encouraging after he struggled for a bit. And I do think he'll be a good player. But for this year, you know, last eight games of the regular season, when you want to start getting your rotation to get some time together, to be comfortable together, and you ultimately, you know, this end up being your playoff rotation, I think this is the way to go. I mean, you know, these, you know, five guys off the bench are not all going to play on any given playoff game, but if these are going to be your regular five who are regularly getting minutes, I mean, I think that George Hill has to be in there. And then when you look at Shake, you know, they're not going to play three guards off the bench. And so you look at it and, you know, if it's Shake versus Maxi, I mean, Shake at his best is, at this point in their career, is a lot better than Maxi. And he's going to give you a lot more than Maxi can. And Shake at his worst, if you put him in and he looks like this game where he's at his worst, you don't play him. It's the playoffs and you don't have to. Right. So I think, you know, with regards to that, there's really no reason to have, you know, Maxi become a regular part of this rotation when you have these guys ahead of him who are a little, well, Hill's a lot older, Shake's a little older. And I think that, you know, if you're in a playoff series, Shake has a better chance to give you like a real big boost in a game where he's a better shooter still. He can come in and hit shots. And when he's on, he's really on. He can, at his best, be a really solid passer. Nothing like, you know, Ben or even an above average initiator in the league, but for the Sixer standards, really, really fine off the bench. And so I think that he has to be ahead of him, especially because you're at a point where if he doesn't have it, you can just cut the rotation down that night.
Yeah, I feel totally fine about the bench. Like, I feel like there's enough stuff on the bench. There's like Matisse, who's a defensive stopper who might play 30 minutes in a random playoff game if he's on. And, you know, I think the bench is totally fine. And I think if the Sixers don't win the East, it will be because they don't get enough from the non-Joel guys, you know, or Joel has a bad series, something, you know. I think it'll matter. What will matter will be the top guys and how they perform. I don't think they're going to be undone by like the bench alone, you know.
Like I said, I don't think they have, yeah, I don't look at them and like, oh, they're weak here, they're weak there, right? They have a good starting lineup and they have a good bench. And if they lose, which, you know, I don't think they're like necessarily the favorites to win the title. So if they lose, it doesn't even necessarily mean that anyone played bad. It just means that they don't have the top end talent that someone like Brooklyn has, or possibly a team like Milwaukee has. It's almost, you know, it would feel like it's a shame to, after such a good year where so many guys played really well, guys we didn't even necessarily expect to play well, from like Tobias all the way on down to like Furkan, you know, and even Matisse, who wasn't in the rotation to start the year. Like, it'd be a shame to like try to point fingers and be like someone wasn't good enough. And if that's the case, right? Like, if especially if like one of Ben, Joel, and Tobias has a horrible series or something and we lose, like, that's fair. But if it's just we play one of those teams and they happen to be more talented, like, I don't want to go down that road where we're just like getting mad at everybody. Like, I think it's a real question for the offseason, but like, I feel good about like how this team has done and how deep they are.
Yeah, I agree. Speaking of the bench, Furkan was asked in Turkish recently. This is Surgeon Kumas on Twitter, about whether or not he wants to stay with the Sixers. Furkan's going to be a free agent this offseason. He said, "I've been here for 4 years. I look at Philly as my home, but the season isn't over and they're the playoffs. I'm going to experience free agency. Of course, I want to stay in Philly." Do you guys want Furkan back? And what is the largest contract that you would like the Sixers to give Furkan, Dan?
I would be happy to have Furkan back. I'm not sure how likely it is. I don't know. I honestly have no idea how people view him value-wise around the league and what he'll be offered. I wouldn't want to bring him back if it means you're putting yourself in a position to not pursue someone else who you like a lot and think is a good fit. I still view Furkan as a guy who can get hot. I think he's a really improved defender. Like, mm-hmm. He, especially, like, I feel like he's had really good hands the second half of the season, just like, you know, getting some steals and deflecting some balls. And I've been really impressed by that. I do think, though, that he's not a guy who needs to be back. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd be happy to have him back if the contract was right. And, you know, off the top of my head, I don't know what that looks like. I don't know what the right contract is. Especially, you know, the Sixers are, you know, they're not in a position where they're going to be like pursuing a max guy or anyone even close to that. They're obviously limited in that way. And so if that means you can bring Furkan back, you know, then that's great. But I wouldn't make it a huge priority. I think that if there's another guy who Darryl really likes, I would not be, you know, I'd be obviously, I'm basically sad to see anyone go, because especially the lower on the bench guys, because they're always very endearing when they come in and play well and give you something you didn't necessarily expect. But I wouldn't be like heartbroken or like mad and think it's an awful move to not bring Furkan back if, you know, there's someone else out there that we want. But if it is the move, if that's the right move to bring him back, I think that, you know, he's had a really solid year and worked himself into the playoff rotation, and I'd be excited about it. I'd be, you know, that'd be a really fun re-signing. He's still so young. I want to say, and let me look this up for a second to double check it.
But is he younger than you?
No, he's older than me. I'm pretty sure. I think he's 23. Furkan is 23 years old. So Shake is 24. He's younger than Shake. He's younger than Matisse, I want to say. I believe Matisse is 24 as well. Matisse is 24. And it feels like Furkan's been here forever. Like you said, like he was, you know, he's been here 4 years and he was drafted. He was drafted the same year as Ben, right? It was that they had 3 first round picks that year. And they took Ben first overall. They took Timotei Luwawu-Cabarrot, 24th. Mm-hmm. And they took Furkan 26. And so in that way, it feels like Furkan is really old, you know?
Yeah.
And he's not. He's 23 still. He's a young guy.
I would be happy to have him back. The in-house replacement of Isaiah Joe, I think, is probably going to matter here, because he's a similar player who's getting paid basically nothing for another like 3 years. So I think that that'll probably complicate things as well. Emily, where are you at with Furkan, and would you like him back?
Yeah, of course I'd like him back. I never want anyone to leave. I'm very attached to everyone. But I do think that if I had to bet on whether he'd be here next year, I would put more money on no, because like you said, the Isaiah Joe of it all. And also if the Sixers make a deep run in the playoffs, if Furkan has a Furkan game, you know, some team who's like in the 10 spot right now is going to probably overpay for a shooter, and the Sixers are potentially not in the spot that they need to hold on to him when we have a deep bench like we do.
The Bulls are going to hand him $10 million a year.
Right, right, exactly.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. Financial operations are needlessly complex. Startups have to cobble together a patchwork of tools to reconcile transactions from different sources and struggle to glean answers from platforms that speak different languages. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so you can pay bills faster, stay in control of company spending, and speed up reconciliation. Apply in minutes at mercury.com and join over 100,000 ambitious startups that trust Mercury, not just for banking and credit cards, but for the precision, control, and focus they need to transform their financial workflows and perform at their best. Mercury, the art of simplified finances. Apply in minutes at mercury.com. Mercury is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services provided by Choice Financial Group and Evolve Bank and Trust. Members FDIC.
You know, so where we're at here is that the Sixers had a really good week. They beat up on teams that they should beat up on. They have 8 games left, and if they take care of business, they'll be the number one seed. Did we learn anything this week? And is there anything that we can learn for the rest of the regular season? The more I watch this stuff, the more I think, honestly, no. Like, I think it's good for them to play together. I think it's good for them to, you know, gel. I think that the Sixers starting lineup is now 23-4 in the year, which is great. And they've been just really great together. And I think them knowing how to gel together is important. But other than that, I don't think that, you know, there are no, like, statement games on the schedule from here on out. And you can zoom out and say that the Sixers were really good this year, and hopefully you can say that they were the number one seed, and that's great. But from here on out, I think it's just like win the games that are in front of you and stay healthy for the playoffs, because so many teams are not trying at this point, which I feel like they were trying to avoid with the play-in tournament. But I think that it's also such a condensed schedule and a weird year that teams are prioritizing health too. I personally don't think so. Emily, do you think there's anything else really to be learned from the regular season, or is it more of that?
Yeah, I don't think there's anything else to be learned. We've seen these guys play together a lot. We know that they're good when they play together mostly. We know what like our bench rotations are looking like. I don't know that anyone is really like fighting for a spot or like jockeying for a spot. Everything's pretty solid. So it's more like, let's get into the playoffs in the one seed and as healthy as we can. I know like people were getting hurt tonight. I know like there were Celtics that got hurt tonight. Mm-hmm. There was a bunch of injuries I saw like coming across the timeline. So like, if we can just stay healthy, knock on wood, and get into the playoffs, I think we know who this team is more than maybe a lot of other teams know like who they are. And I think that's a benefit to us.
Yeah. I mean, I just said that the Sixers are 23-4. So they played 27 games together, the starting five, and obviously Brooklyn has 7. So, you know, a lot of teams are having that sort of thing. Dan, what do you think?
No, I mean, I don't think there's really anything to be learned. I wish I could say I felt like we know a ton about this team. I think that one, we can confidently say that when they're healthy, you know, the main guys do click together really well, which is huge. I think that's a huge deal, because I don't think that it's, if one of their main guys is out long term, if they have a 2-week injury in the middle of the playoffs, I think they're screwed. But I think most teams are. You know, basically anyone but Brooklyn probably is. And I think that, you know, yes, it's bad that if, you know, there's a one game thing, or say Joel can't play this one game, or any of those guys, and then yeah, that's rough, and that could be a problem. And I think that's the biggest thing we learned, that they're really dominant together, and they really don't handle a game out well, or a game with at least one of those guys out well, one of their best three. But if we're looking at the playoffs, I'm not sure how much we know. You know, we haven't played the top teams at full strength. You know, Milwaukee kicked our ass this year, and we had no one playing. And we had the tiebreaker over Brooklyn because we mostly beat them, but they had no one playing. They beat us in one of the games when they had no one playing. Mm-hmm. And so I wish I could say, and this isn't even a Sixers critique, you know, that they, you know, we don't know about these Sixers. I don't think we've gotten a chance to learn about many teams, because, you know, teams are resting guys. Guys have been hurt. Guys have been sick with COVID. Guys have been, you know, we've had a lot of injuries. And I think for the most part, it's been like, maybe this is more due to COVID, but it's like been more than usual. I feel like a lot of times, like a guy gets hurt here and a guy gets hurt there. And then, you know, you miss a game or two here. But we've had this year, I think, you know, more than usual, this guy's out 2 weeks, and these guys are out 5 games, and every team is running into teams because of the protocols and COVID, where, you know, they're playing games where neither team is at full strength. And there have been so few games where either team is, you know, where both teams are at full strength. And that's not just the Sixers. That's Brooklyn. That's you know, Milwaukee. That's everybody. You know, so it's not like the Sixers are at some kind of disadvantage in this way. But I'm so eager to see these games played in the playoffs. You know, where you have games where it's like Ben was sick. Could he have played here? You know, could he have fought through it in a way where you would never want him to in the regular season, but maybe he would be able to, or like, you know, Joel or Tobias has a bad knee, but maybe they could play that game and would in the playoffs. And I want to see those games, you know, because those are going to happen. Guys are going to be hurt. Guys are going to, you know, have non-COVID sicknesses that they're going to be, you know, game time decisions for. And that's what I'm, you know, really excited to see, is like finally get to see these teams at full strength. I think all three are like the, you know, of the three teams I see having a chance in the East are really, really good. Mm-hmm. Like really, really good. And so we should have some really great series ahead of us. But I for the rest of the year, I really don't see anything to do. I think that it's basically going to be more of the same. You know, this year's going to play teams that are resting guys because they're bad and missing the playoffs and they don't want guys to get hurt, or they already have guys hurt, or guys are sick, or mm-hmm. the Sixers have, it's all of it. And it's been all year. And I don't think there's anything left to know this year other than that the Sixers had a really successful year and they face the same obstacles as everyone. And they arguably overcame them better than anyone. I mean, they're going to be in this one seed almost definitely. And that's a big deal. But in these last eight games, just got to get through them and hope everyone stays healthy.
Yeah. Dan, in the rundown here, we have a thing about Dinwiddie. You tell me, is there a new report that Spencer Dinwiddie might be healthy for Brooklyn soon?
So they've been saying that. he said that, actually. And let me see if I can pull something up. Maybe I can read a quote here. I didn't. Here we go. So this is from a week ago from Hoopsite. This is April 22nd. So this is an article from hoopsite.com. And here we have Nets don't rule out Spencer Dinwiddie returning this season. Sean Marks says he's talked to Spencer Dinwiddie, as has the performance team. He's progressing well in LA. I would never bet against Spencer Dinwiddie. I guess that's what Sean Marks said to Alex Schiffer. Doesn't rule out a return, but the primary concern is his health. Any kind of return will be heavily evaluated. And it seems like, you know, it's not necessarily, I wouldn't know what odds I would put on it because there's so little reporting on it, but it's definitely not something you can count out. Hypothetically, if he came back, I'm sure he'd be on some kind of minutes restriction. But he's been saying, this is before last week, he's been saying he thinks he can come back. And so I think that would be a big deal for them if he were able to. And you know, they already have a really good bench, but he would be, you know, a huge addition to that. I think that would be really tough if he came back. That's just another weapon they have. But I guess, you know, for you guys, hypothetically, say, you know, he's coming back and maybe he comes back in the conference semis and has a series under his belt and we get a Sixers Nets series in the conference finals where Dinwiddie, I mean, he's going to come off the bench anyway. So, you know, maybe he has a cap of like 20 minutes a game. Does that scare you guys more? I mean, obviously we're already, I hate to use the word scare because it sounds it sounds like you're backing down or something, but the Nets are really good. Does that worry you more than you already would be about a Nets series with regards to, you know, the Sixers being able to pull that kind of upset off?
I overall would be surprised if he came back because he's a ball handler. Like, it feels like if a guy's going to come back in the middle of a playoff run, it's usually like a plug and play guy who is more in the mold of like a Jay Crowder, Iguodala. But if we're assuming he's back, that would not be good for the Sixers. He killed the Sixers. I don't know if that bears out.
I think his career high still against the Sixers, right? He had that 40 point game.
I think he kills us. I mean, I would still think that if we lose to Brooklyn in the playoffs, it's because they have Kevin Durant, James Harden, and Kyrie Irving. And you know, they also have good role players. Blake Griffin looks like he's 25. It's great. I love it.
Oh my God. Did you see that dunk today?
Yeah, it's great. I really appreciate it.
Oh, so annoying.
Yep. So yeah, I don't, I hope that he is having a happy time. He's a big crypto guy. He's probably had a lot of fun with whatever is happening with that these days. NFTs, big, what's that app? Big Shot?
Top Shot.
That's it.
I'm an investor.
I wish him big all shot. I hope he just gets ready for next year. Emily, what about you? How would you feel about that?
I mean, I don't want to have to play Spencer Dinwiddie, mm-hmm. but like you said, I don't think he is the tipping point. I think if the Sixers are going to lose that series, it's not going to be because of him, and they're going to win it despite him no matter what. It just would be like another mountain that we have to climb of the Brooklyn Nets.
Right. I mean, and you know, if somebody's taking an open shot off of one of their stars, I'd rather it be Bruce Brown than Dinwiddie. And you can clip this for when Bruce Brown hits a game winner over the Sixers. So that's a lot of fun. We have something in here about Dwight's rebounding. I just love Dwight. I've had a great time with the Dwight experience. He's had 15 technicals. I wouldn't take back any of them. I think they were great. His rebounding, I remember talking to Adio on Out of Sight before the year, and I was saying that, you know, Dwight has a very limited offensive game, but what he does do is he earns you extra possessions with his offensive rebounding. And tonight he had a very good game. I think he had 12 and 10 or something like that. Emily, what have you thought about Dwight as we're coming close to the end of the year? Clearly he has not been a negative in the locker room, like I think we were worried about. You know, he had a great year last year with LA, but I think some of us were worried that outside of a LeBron team, he would revert to what he used to be. But you know, looking back on the first regular season with Dwight, how do you feel?
I'm very grateful for his presence. He is a delight on and off the court. I am one of those people that like loves like chaotic play, and I feel like he's like the epitome of just like chaotic play, mm-hmm. like the technicals and the rebounds and just like being so large and just like the shit talk, like just everything. He's just like
he's 8 feet tall. He's
looks like chaos personified too. Like I wouldn't trade it for anything. I can't think of a better backup center that I would rather have. More Dwight Howard, please.
Yeah. Dan, you've talked about how people's complaints about Dwight usually amount to them being like, well, we need a backup center that can switch on defense and block shots and shoot threes and shoot in the mid-range. And you're like, that's a $15 million player. So I think that this has been a very pro-Dwight podcast. How do you feel looking back on his first regular season?
Almost. I like Dwight. I understand why he frustrates people. Mm-hmm. But if we're going to do the thing where it's like, you know, and I don't, you know, want to like, again, get back to this, but like, there's the thing that is said a lot, you know, and would probably people probably say this listening to our podcast, where they're like, you know, people only want to focus on what Ben is not good at, and they don't want to appreciate what he's good at. I feel a lot better doing that about a guy on the league minimum. You know, I feel like I can say that about Dwight. And yeah, Dwight is, you know, bad at way more things than Ben is. But I'm okay for a guy like this to say, but look at what he's good at. Yes, he's, you know, kind of ridiculous sometimes, and you know, he's the technicals and he has some really bad games. But he is such a good rebounder. And I don't think that really gets talked about enough or appreciated enough. He's not the perfect offensive fit, especially, you know, in the non-Joel business when you want Ben on the floor. But he's getting them extra possessions on offense. He's preventing extra possessions on defense. So, you know, we all know Dwight is a Hall of Famer. He's, you know, you could say he's a borderline top 10 center of all time. He was monstrous in his prime. I think he won, you know, defensive player of the year like three straight years. He's, you know, a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 time All-Star. Former first overall pick, and he's, you know, he's getting towards the end of his career. He's averaging career high in offensive rebound percentage and defensive rebound percentage this season. And yeah, in other years he was, you know, he was taking on more of a role as a rim protector, and he was taking on more of a role as a scorer, and that, you know, that could take away from that. But I don't care. You know, he's been past his prime for a while now. And this year, he has a 17.4 offensive rebound percentage, a 35.5 defensive rebound percentage, coming up to a 26.6 true rebounding percentage, or I'm sorry, total rebounding percentage. And that is, like, by far, I don't feel like checking how long it's been since a Sixers had that, but it's been a long time. It's in the Joel Embiid era, no one approaches it. No one's within like six of that for a season. This year, the closest player is like almost 10 away in terms of rebound, in terms of total rebounding percentage. And I'm not going back all these seasons to see it, but like, but we, you know, we had for years, Joel was leading the team at like 19, 20. And he's, I think he's around like 17 this year. Joel's at 26.6. And he's not playing the minutes he always played. He's not having the impact in other areas that he had when he was at his best. But I think it's a huge deal that you can bring him in and you know he's going to go for those rebounds. He fouls, he does other things. I'm fine with it. In limited minutes in the playoffs, I love that, you know, you're going to be able to put him in there and he's going to be able to give you that extra possession. He's going to be able to prevent that extra possession on defense. I think he's by far the best backup center we've had in Joel's time here. And I'm really, I feel so good that we have him going forward.
Me too. I both
also feel like he does all these like fouls and technicals, but I also feel like he has played basketball long enough that he knows when to do that. And in a close game, he's not going to pull that chip because he knows that like it could change the tide of the game. And so it's kind of like if they're, you know, we're up by 12, then he's like a little more loose, but he knows how to like tighten it up and like rein it in and just like kind of play more like flat and straight. And then when he can really like amp up the Dwightness, which it takes time to learn. And I think because he's just like such a vet that he knows those kind of things.
And in the playoffs are going to be almost all those times. Like I know everyone was like furious when he got thrown out when we didn't have like another center on the roster. And it's like, yeah, that's really annoying. And it's like, but he's, you know, in like you're like 17 or something ridiculous. And he, like you said, like he's not gonna do this in the playoffs. Like he might commit a million fouls, but he's not gonna take dumb technicals in a close playoff game. It's just not gonna happen. Like I totally agree with you.
Right. And that's definitely what the team is betting on too, is that he is good enough and smart enough to not fuck around a ton in the playoffs, which I trust that he will. I mean, he had a very good playoff run with the Lakers. So I'm sure that he knows what it takes at that point. A few non-Sixers things before we get to our predictions. Eagles draft, they got Devontae Smith. And then right away, Devontae Smith and Jalen Hurts, and then Brandon Graham was there. They went to a Sixers game. How do you guys feel about the Eagles draft? I'm thrilled with the Devontae Smith part, and we'll see about all the other guys, but I was very excited about that. Emily, what did you think?
Yeah, it was great. I was trying to do the thing where I pretended it was like the olden ages, and I refused to get on Twitter until the Eagles pick, so I could really like not be like Woj bombed out of the surprise of it. So it was very intense and fun. And I screamed in my house and I was very excited that they didn't blow the pick. Now, granted, because everyone's happy, the person who got picked right after will probably be like the next Patrick Mahomes, even though I know it's not a quarterback. But but no, I was very happy. I guess I was like, I bet you that he'll ring the bell at the Sixers game on Friday. And I was right.
You nailed it. Wow.
I have a knack for calling the bell ringer sometimes.
They should let us do it.
They should. Everyone would know who we were.
Bebo Paul would have us come in there. He's a friend of the podcast.
True.
Dan, how do you feel? Eagles draft.
Yeah, well, I mean, I hate to make Emily, you know, like nightmare come true here, but the next pick was Justin Fields.
Oh, it was a quarterback.
It was Justin Fields. The pick they traded out of wasn't a quarterback, but the next pick was.
That's right.
So, yeah, I mean, maybe it will be that. But, no, I feel really good about it. First of all, I would have been happy with Fields or Smith just because I don't watch a ton of college football because Pitt is not that good. and I watched the college football playoffs, so I at least got to see those guys play. Mm-hmm. Of the guys that they might take there, so that was exciting at least that I've seen him play and seen him play really well. But in a sense that actually matters, we had Brandon Lee Galton on the pod last week from Bleeding Green Nation, and he was all in on Devontae Smith, and he actually knows football, unlike me. So that was plenty good enough for me. That was very exciting that we got the guy that he really wanted. I don't know anybody who got drafted after that, but I'm thrilled that the guy at the top was the guy who, the guy we had on, who we actually trust to know the birds and to know football, really wanted. I feel great about that.
Not only Brandon, but I guess a month ago or however many weeks ago, we had Tyler Tynes on the podcast, and Tyler did a giant feature story where he went to Alabama and profiled Devontae Smith. So read that.
Did you read it now?
I did read it now, and I loved it.
Delightful.
I had it bookmarked, and I wouldn't let myself read it until he was an Eagle, and he is, so I did, and it was great.
Speaking of college football that no one cares about, my Delaware Blue Hens continue to roll in the FCS playoffs. They won against Jacksonville State today, and now they're in like the quarterfinals or something, and it's very exciting for me and my dad, and that's about it. So there you go.
You, your dad, and Joe Biden are thrilled about this.
And maybe Delaware. Joe Flacco. He might care a little bit.
We'll see. We'll get him
on. There.
What a gang.
What a gang. Yeah. We talked briefly about baseball before. The Phillies lost. Things are great. Dan, you have a point to make about when the bullpen's clear. The floor is yours.
Yeah, I just want to say, I'll make this really quick. I think that the bullpen's clearing is the most pathetic thing in sports. I mean, they're not doing anything, and the two teams are next to each other running out there. By the time they get there, it's already over. They look ridiculous. I hate it.
You know, it's so far to run that...
It's really far.
They're running like 400 feet. So,
and they're jogging. They're not in the sprint. They're not trying to get in the mix. They want it to be over by the time.
Victor Neris the other night, and Lee was at the game. He got in the mix. He was getting pushed around, and that was fun. But I think a lot of things sound good at like foot one. But then when you're at like foot 250, you're like, oh, what am I even going to do up there? It's like they're already backing away from each other. What's the point? It's like I have kids. What am I doing this? I always love it. I love a benches clearing stuff in baseball. Like when the Dodgers threw at Victorino in the playoffs, I really enjoyed that. Emily, you saw it live. Was it really exciting?
Well, it was like half exciting. And also I was coming back from eating a hot dog in the bathroom, but it was really cold and I was eating hot dogs.
Hang on a second. Hang on. You... were eating the hot dog in the bathroom, or you ate the hot dog and then went to the bathroom and then came back, or you went to the bathroom and then got a hot dog.
And I ate the hot dog in the bathroom because I was cold.
Hang on. You were cold in the concourse.
Uh-huh.
And did you go into a stall?
What? Yeah.
So you weren't just over the sink while people were walking by.
I was eating my hot dog because it was cold and windy and I wanted to be protected from the wind. That. So I ate, and then I came back from enjoying my hot dog, and the benches had cleared.
I think that's great.
Perfect.
What condiments do you like on a hot dog?
Well, I normally like the raw chopped onions, but they don't put them out because of COVID. So I've had to regress to just ketchup.
Ooh, okay. Something mm-hmm. to know about me. Hate ketchup. Don't like it. Mustard only is what I do.
Like yellow mustard?
I like a spicy brown.
I mean, I prefer no mustard ever. Except honey mustard. But not on a hot dog. Just on chicken fingers.
Dan, how do you eat a hot dog? And have you ever had one in the bathroom?
I've never had one in the bathroom, but I will say this. Depending on what you classify as a condiment, you could very easily say that I do not like any of them. Like... ketchup, gross. I love tomatoes, but ketchup, no. Mustard, no. Mayonnaise, no. Any of that. The chopped onions, I don't know if that's a condiment, but I wouldn't want that on my hot dog. I don't like any of this stuff.
So what do you just eat the hot dog plain?
Yeah, I just eat the hot dog plain. Or like, well, there's a place at Pitt that actually just closed because of the pandemic, which is sad, but it was like, it's been around like forever. And they did like hot dogs, and you get it with like, you know, like bacon and cheese and all that. And that all sounds good to me. But I don't, this is not even a hot dog thing. Like, I don't like those condiments on anything. Wow. But that also, I also eat like I'm 10.
You can get bacon hot dogs at Sheetz, and those are really good. Sheetz also weirdly has good potato skins. I shouldn't say that in like Wawa land, but it's true.
Listen, I'm in Sheetz land right now, so I think that's your past.
The potato skins are really good.
Okay, Dan, there is one more thing on the rundown before preview and predictions. It says Janice Ian / Nick's girlfriend, Julie, same person, general comedy TV talk. What do you want to say?
Yeah, I was just last night I was watching New Girl, which is a great show.
And for the first time?
No.
Okay.
I was just watching it because, okay, so here's the thing. I can't fall asleep without the television on. Because if the television is not on, all I think about is everything I've ever done wrong in my entire life.
Sure.
I get that.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. I also sleep with the TV on, so it's fine.
If the TV is not on, I will hate myself before I fall asleep. And I'll fall asleep because I'm tired, not because I want to fall asleep. But yeah, then I was like, you know, just kind of hanging there. I like to watch like a one full episode and then go to bed, but with the TV still on. And I was like, oh, like, you know, I've seen this for like the millionth time, but I wonder who is the actress who plays Nick's girlfriend, Julia, who's like the lawyer one from season one. And then I found her name, and then I was like, oh, what else is she in? Because I was like, you know, I had nothing else going on. I was just sitting there before bed. And I saw
she's defensive. It's fine. Sure.
No, I am defensive because it's weird to just Google random things, but I actually do it all the time. So I'm not going to make excuses. I'm done with these. I just Google stuff. And she was also Janice Ian in Mean Girls, which is another, I know it's that one of Emily's favorites. It's a great movie. And that was really exciting for me because when I first started watching New Girl a while ago, I always confused it with Mean Girls, not like conceptually, but just like which name is which. And so I'm really glad there's some crossover between the two of them. This has nothing to do with the Sixers, but what kind of comedy TV shows do you guys like?
I'm not going to answer that. I'm going to tell a quick story and then Emily can talk about TV. First time I saw Mean Girls was with a girl that I quote unquote dated in sixth grade, I want to say. Got to a few months later and she cheated on me. Whatever that meant then. It was like around the rumor mill and I found out and I was heartbroken, whatever. Fast forward another 6 months, I'm dating a new girl. And it turns out I don't like this person. But I was talking to my brother and we had been dating for a little while. And the only relationship I had, the young lady cheated on me. And then that's the reason it ended, because that's how it works in all the movies. And I was talking to my brother and I was dating this new girl. See, it's like a part of the show. Perfect. And I say to my brother, I go, I want to break up with her, but she hasn't cheated on me yet. So what the fuck am I supposed to do? What is she waiting for? And he was like, no, you can just break up with someone if you want to. I was like, what? Anyway, that's how I learned about young love. Emily, what's your favorite TV show?
Well, I have a tip for Dan. So what I like to do when watching TV during bed is I like to watch The Great Food Truck Race.
And I love food trucks.
So you put episode one on when you go to sleep, and then by the time you wake up in the morning, it's the finale. And so you just skip all the stuff in the middle and find out who won. And I've been like going through seasons. There's like 11 seasons. And so that is a fun way to watch television.
Love that.
Yeah. So that's that. I love New Girl. My favorite television show is Friday Night Lights. But if we're going to talk comedy shows, I'd like to recommend this delightful family comedy called The Unicorn on CBS. It's delightful.
Never heard of that.
That's on now, right? Because I think you mentioned that last week.
Yeah, so there's two seasons. It just finished. It's just one of those shows that's just like light. It's not like good comedy, like edgy comedy. It's just like stupid family. Like there's a dog named Linda. It's just delightful. And he doesn't stress you out. So it's great.
That sounds great. Are you guys into what kind of reality TV other than Bachelor, Bachelorette? Are you guys watching The Circle?
This is going to be the Emily loves reality TV. Emily knows more reality TV than anyone I know.
Haven't watched the last four of The Circle yet. It's been a really busy weekend, but very into The Circle, very into the Challenge All-Stars on Paramount Plus. The regular challenge just ended, so that was great. I really wish you guys would watch The Challenge.
I watched it when I was younger, and there was a guy from Boston that I loved, and he, he would beat the shit out of everybody.
It was CT. It was CT. Okay. I am certain of it.
Yeah.
He's still on, so please keep watching it.
Oh, wow. And I love a catfish. I think we talked about that. I love a catfish. I mean, if from we haven't alienated our whole listener base by now, I mean, who the hell is still listening?
Yeah, are you watching The Circle?
Yeah.
Maybe we can get what's his face from Contra Hocken on the podcast.
We can, the guy who doesn't wear a shirt. Yeah, we can get him.
I've met his brother once.
Mitchell.
I've met Ed though once at a party.
Ed from last year, who was on with his mother.
Yeah, but that's Mitchell's brother. I've met Ed.
All right. So we have to get Mitchell on the podcast. Dan's excited. Yeah. We're all excited. Now on to the predictions. Preview. Emily, how did we fare last week? Update the standings, please.
So my plan backfired. So you guys both went 4-0 and I went 3-1, even though I said I thought they were gonna win all the games, but I needed to make a different pick, and then I had to pick a loss, and it wasn't true. So Dan is at 45-23, I'm at 42-26. And Steve is at 39-29. So we're all three games apart, basically. Wow.
All right. Mm-hmm. I love it. This week, the Sixers play tomorrow night, Monday night, in the second half of a back-to-back at Chicago. Then they play at Houston on Wednesday. And then they play in a back-to-back at the end of the week at home against the Pelicans and against the Detroit Pistons. I feel like I never go first. I should go first and let you guys think and choose the opposite of what I choose. Okay, so I'm going to pick that they go 3-1 this week and that they lose to New Orleans in the first game of that back-to-back at home. Zion's very tough. Yeah, that's what I'll say. 3-1. Loss to New Orleans.
They're winning them all. They're winning them all.
Wow.
Okay.
It's a 4-0 week.
So would that give us an 8-game win streak or more than that?
That would give us
an 8-8.
Because, we lost last Saturday. Last we went 0-4.
0-4, then it was 4-0. Got it.
Right. I mean, I don't know if it'll happen, but I'm not picking us to lose to any of these teams. So let's do it, 4-0.
Emily, you've been playing some strategy lately. What will happen this week?
I'm going to pick them to go 3-1. What I really need to do is at this point, it's going to be really hard to catch Dan because you're going to have to pick three games different from them and get them all right. And there's only eight left, which is just going to be really difficult. So I just kind of have to keep you at bay and just solidify second.
Now that we know Steve's in last, can we come up with a last place punishment?
I don't think
get for winning this.
I don't want anything to win, but I would like a last place punishment.
Honestly, I think a punishment, people wouldn't like it. I don't think it's a good idea. I think that everybody these days, participation trophies, I don't think so. So, Emily, what do you choose?
I'm going to say... they lose. These teams are bad. I'm going to say they lose to the Pelicans too, because they lost to the Pelicans on my wedding day. And
you'll never forgive them for it.
I'll never forgive them.
It ruined the whole day.
I can't even say that out loud. It was the best day of my life. But they'll ruin this day when they lose this week. It'll ruin it. So Yeah, that's that. But Sam's gonna win, and that annoys me because I like to win things. So
you just have to go for a Hail Mary that final week.
Yeah. But then I'm just gonna have to pick 0-4. Like 0-4, and that's awful. And it's just not gonna happen.
We'll just have to see. That's it. I miss you guys. We didn't have a midweek podcast this week. It was a very busy week with New Girl and the challenge and the circle. So, you know, we'll be back this week with another locker room in the middle of the week, and we'll let you know when that is. And I think that's it, unless you guys have anything else.
Nope.
Great seeing you both. I will, I'll see you later on this week, and I'll text you right when we hang up to make sure you got home safe. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Yeah.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.
Support for this show comes from Pendo. Pendo improves the apps your customers and employees rely on. Whether you're building applications for customers or managing applications for employees, Pendo can help deliver better experiences for your users so they can get more value from your software. Pendo also provides AI-powered product analytics that fuel in-app guides to deliver personalized guidance to customers directly inside your app. Visit pendo.io/podcast to learn more about how your team can use Pendo to start building better digital experiences. There, you can also check out Pendo's lineup of free certification courses, 12 hours of in-depth training for your product management teams on topics from AI to product analytics to product-led growth. That's pendo.io/podcast to learn more.